Monday, March 25th. The time is 3:33 p.m. Members present today, Vice Chair Senator Dyson, Senator Faircloth, Senator Bishop, Senator Machicki, and myself, Senator Giesel. Today's agenda, we have House Joint Resolution 6. Representative Sharice Millett is here. She is carrying the legislation, and the topic is Legacy Oil Well Cleanup and Awareness in NPRA. So, welcome, Representative Millett. I'll let you put yourself on the record and present the resolution.
Thank you, members of the committee, for hearing the bill, and thank you, Chairwoman Giesel. For the record, my name is Sharice Millett. I represent House District 24 in the beautiful city of Anchorage, Alaska. Today, we're hearing HJR 6. It should be familiar to some of you from last year. It's also a resolution that I carried last year, and actually it made it all its way down to the Senate Energy Committee. This issue is strikingly difficult for me to even comprehend why the federal government has turned a blind eye. We had started out with 137 legacy wells that were drilled between 1944 and 1981 in NPRA. The yellow dots on the map behind you are where they are scattered throughout. Since we've started work on this legacy well issue, only 17 of the 137 wells have been correctly plugged and cleaned up. So you still have 120 remaining out there. We've tried very, very hard to work with the BLM to get a cleanup plan in progress, to have them coordinate with our Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission to come to some agreement on what type of wells and how to remediate them to not conflict with our regulations. That's one of the biggest failures that we have in this problem with the legacy wells. To give you some examples of some of the legacy wells, Kathy will show you some pictures in a minute, but some of the wells are close to some places that the residents of the villages can hear them whistle, and they're whistling because that's natural gas seeping out of the well. We also have some locations that have barrels that the Navy brought in that we're not sure what was in those barrels. They just say hazardous on them, that are strewn across the tundra. There's wells that are leaking. There's natural seepage out there, but there are also wells that are leaking. We have two wells that we can't find anymore. One is buried under the Colville River from a landslide, and some are starting to, because of the way the permafrost works and the way the environment is up on NPRA, they're starting to sink in and lakes are being formed over them, which will require a lot more investment for remediation. So what we're trying to do with the legacy well resolution is get the federal government's attention and say, first and foremost, clean up the wells. It's been 70-some years since these wells have been drilled and not remediated. And also to encourage them to open up more areas of NPRA, even those areas where there's legacy wells located on. We have talked to producers who would be interested in those well sites that obviously are producing gas and producing oil that could be leased, and as part of their lease agreement would be responsible for the remediation of the well sites. I've been down, and Kathy Forrester has been down in front of the Senate Energy Committee last summer. Senator Lisa Murkowski has been a champion of this. She has received $6 million in addition to the $1 million we get every year. Obviously, that's contingent on the Senate passing a budget, so we haven't seen that money yet, but it did make it into the budget. We've been receiving about $1 million a year. What we'd like to do is we'd like, one, the BLM to work in coordination with Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Two, we'd like to look at some reasonable ways to get the wells cleaned up. And three, we'd like them to not send a message to the rest of the people that do business in Alaska that this is okay, this is all right to leave the land in this condition when they're done drilling for resources. It sends a really complicated and, you know, it's a big hypocrisy that here we have the people, the Bureau of Land Management, whose sole purpose is to protect our lands. Protect and keep our lands healthy, and this is the legacy that they've left. So with that, Chairman Giesel, I'm going to pass it on to Kathy Forrester from Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. She's got some great graphics for you to look at and a lot of statistics on what's been going on. But one thing I do want to mention, and we recently, Kathy Forrester has gone through some of the in-depth well data and came across a line in the well data and the well information that talked about making some of these wells historic sites. It's happened already. When the BLM was questioned about it, they said it was an inartful wording on the bottom of the well description. In actuality, it's not an inartful word. It's actually a practice that they have used to declare some wells historic sites, and that is the absolute last thing that we would like them to do. There's nothing historic about wells seeping oil and gas and barrels on the tundra. There's nobody in the world that will take a historical trip to go and see the dangerous situation that we have up in the MPRA. So that is something that we've pointed out to a lot of people, and it might even be something that we might want to add to the resolution if the committee chooses to do so, to point out that flagrantly they're trying to avoid their responsibilities.
Very good. Questions for Representative Millett? Yes, Senator Dyson.
I'm really proud of you for reaching down the mud and pulling this skunk up and holding it up for everybody to see and creating the reaction, a very healthy one that you've done. And I might say that Sharice has family members that live not too far from this area, who inherited you there, and so on. And anyways, I appreciate what you've done and the results of it. I'm delighted.
To the chair, thank you, Senator Dyson. I'm trying to be very tenacious on this issue, but I cannot take all the credit. Kathy Forrester and Senator Murkowski and everybody that's gone down to Energy Council has brought this message down to the Senate. So it's by broad audience that has brought the attention to these wells.
Very good. Further questions for Representative Millett? Hearing none, thank you very much for your diligent work.
Thank you.
On your way to another committee.
I am, thank you. And Chairman Giesel, I also have my staff, Jeff Turner, here that can answer any questions also.
So excellent.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, committee members. And while Commissioner Forster is coming to the table, I want the record to reflect that we've been joined by Representative McGuire. Excuse me. Pardon me, Senator McGuire. Sorry. Thank you. Welcome, Commissioner Forster.
Thank you. All right, Chairwoman Giesel and members of the Senate Finance Committee, I'm always honored to come before you guys because you do such important work, and you're some of my very best friends. For the record, my name is Kathy Forster. I'm the Engineering Commissioner and the Chair of the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, and I do want to thank Representative Millett for picking up and carrying the flag, and for the rest of you who have been helping with that. I've been beating my head against this brick wall since I came to the commission 8 years ago. And other than getting angrier, I don't know how much progress I have made. But I'd like to share with you why this is such a concern to me, to the ALGCC, and should be to you guys and to all the citizens of Alaska. As Representative Millett said, between 1944 and 1982, the U.S. government drilled 136, it's 136 wells to test out Arctic drilling concepts in the NPR. They call them legacy wells, and I hope you're looking at my testimony. Those wells are all in the western North Slope, in or near the NPRA. As you know, the federal government has recently closed off much of this area for future development, supposedly to protect the environment. Bang, bang, bang my head. But as I show you pictures of what the federal government has already done to this area and refuses to fix, you might ask yourself what the land really needs protection from. I'm not a big fan of the PowerPoints where you read everything that people can already read for themselves, so I've got pictures. Engineers do better with pictures than words anyway. We're not too good readers. Here we go. The BLM within the Department of the Interior operates these legacy wells. Now, this one's one of the good ones. It's not too bad. And as far as a surface site goes, it's really only a collision hazard for snow machiners and ATVers and a drowning or entrapment hazard for children or small animals. So it's one of the good ones. All right. essentially every one of the legacy wells has been out of compliance with Alaska regulations at one time or another, and most still are. I thought that they would be out of compliance with federal regulations as well, but then I checked into the federal regulations on proper plugging and abandonment and cleanup, and it's basically whatever the BLM decides needs to be done is what needs to be done. So they can hold anybody to any standard they want to, including themselves, which is no standard. And all I can say to that is, wow, and I hope you do too. This well has piped down to 800 feet, and below that, it's an open hole section down to 4,000 feet. It was drilled down to 4,000 feet, but only cased to 800. They encountered oil and gas in the open hole section, but left the well filled with drilling fluids and open to the atmosphere. There is no wellhead on this well. Most likely over time, that open hole section has sloughed in and it's closed off, but there's no guarantee of that. And that is not, you know, there's no guarantee that that is a secure well instead of a landmine. And as I said before, in the summer, that boxed-in cellar is a hazard for children and animals, and it can be a poison hazard because who knows what's floating around in there. And all year long, it is an eyesore and a ticking time bomb. And again, remember, this is not one of the bad ones. All right, this well, Simpson Cortez number 30, is a different kind of mess. This is a natural seep, but the well has been leaking natural gas from its primitive wellhead for quite some time. So a few years ago, BLM got approval from the AOGCC to plug and abandon the well. They gave us a procedure of what they were going to do. We looked it over and said, yes, that will be a way to secure this well that is leaking natural gas. So yes, it's serious, so yes, it needs to be fixed. So instead of properly plugging it per the procedure that they submitted, they just went out and put a hose in the well and pumped a little cement down. Then they walked away. And I know Senator Dyson is an engineer, and he knows that without a plug at the bottom to, you know, a cement retainer for that cement to land on, there's no guarantee where it went. Without a calculation of how much volume of cement was put in, there's no guarantee. And without tagging it or doing a pressure test on it, you have no idea where that cement is, what kind of a seal it is. But, you know, they just gave it a lick of promise and a goodbye.
Yes, Senator Dyson.
Kathy. Is there data on how the casing was cemented to the formation on any or all these wells?
Well, there is some data on the drilling and casing and completion of these wells. It's highly variable, and it's been a real struggle for us to get that data. In fact, it's only been in the last month that I've gotten all of the data on all of the wells. And I've been, you know, I've got a daytime job, but I've also been going through every single well and looking at it in great detail, and I am troubled with some of the wells. But
excuse me, Commissioner Forrester, before you go on, I'd like the record to reflect that we've been joined by Senator French. Welcome. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Okay. So in short, what they did fell way short of what we gave them approval to do. It fell way short of our regulatory requirements. And fell way short of just good oil field and engineering practices. But by what they did, they've created such a mess that it will now be hard to get back in and fix it correctly. So they complain about the cost of fixing things, but when they do stuff like this, they're their own worst enemy. And as I said before, there's no guarantee that what they did will prevent this well from leaking in the future. This is one of my favorite pictures, but not in a good way. All those brown blobs, they're not muskox, they're not caribou, they're rusting barrels that at one time contained some sort of drilling fluids. Some of them have hazardous stamped on them, but don't worry, there's nothing hazardous in them. They've all rusted open, and whatever it is has leached into the ground. Sarcasm intended. The BLM says they don't even have sufficient funds to go out and clean up these hundreds of rusting barrels, but they have a big enough budget to rent an expensive helicopter every year and send staff out on camping trips to take pictures every year. Our tax dollars at work. So if you're getting the impression that I'm angry, the smile is just there so you won't look away. And so you see the pipe sticking out of the ground in the upper left side of the picture? That's another well that was drilled deep, cased shallow, and then left not plugged, and with no wellhead. But this one was left filled with diesel instead of drilling fluid. So after and diesel is a fluid that the U.S. government won't let people use in some of their oil field operations anymore because it's too hazardous, but they'll leave it in wells in Alaska. After more than 50 years of snow melt and fluid swapping, we probably don't have to worry about that diesel being downhole anymore. Again, it's probably leached out with the hazardous fluid that was in those barrels. All right. If anyone needs a break to go vomit, just let me know. Some of these pictures have appeared in publications, mailers, fundraisers opposing ANWR development, and the oil industry was blamed for them. This is the kind of thing I've seen in anti-ANWR brochures. As you look at these pictures, consider the hypocrisy of the federal government wanting to protect Alaska from the very sort of mess that they caused and refused to clean up in the very same area. They're worrying about imaginary future problems while turning a blind eye to real and present ones, and ones that they created and responsible to clean up. Allowing these unsafe and unsightly wells to litter Alaska's wilderness and threaten both human safety and the environment is unacceptable. Nonetheless, the BLM has properly plugged and abandoned only a handful of the wells, and the North Slope Borough has taken care of another seven themselves. Thank you. One more thing I'd like to point out while we're looking at this picture before moving to the next one. As Representative Millett suggested, when the BLM shows a total disregard for the laws of the state of Alaska, they make it difficult for me to do my job. It's hard for me to go to the regulated industry and ask them to hold themselves to a different standard than the federal government holds itself to. And we've even had some pushback on this from industry. And we can't have that. We cannot have this be the gold standard for cleanup in our state. And at a previous hearing, the BLM representative, who I think will be talking later, was asked if he was required to plug these wells to the state of Alaska's standards. And he very glibly said, no, I am not. And that is correct, although anyone else who operates a well in Alaska is required to operate them to our standards. The federal government has told us that we're not the boss of them. So, happy. Moving to the next picture. The well on this site was drilled in 1947, and this is just the debris that is still there. You know, it's windy and everything degrades over time. So after 65 years of being blown around and rusting and rotting, this is just what's left now. Now, the legacy wells have been an issue since the middle of the last century, so I don't intend to try to politicize them. Some, you know, you can certainly have a field day with that if you want to, but you know, my issue is that this is a problem for the state of Alaska. These are health and safety hazards. This is just a blatant violation of our regulations. Some of these wells are leaking natural gas and oil. It's just wrong. And some of them are left in such a downhole condition in areas that have future development potential that downhole flow could be occurring that would cause waste of the resource. So politicize away if you want. But, you know, to me, this is just bad oil field practices.
Excuse me, Commissioner. Senator Machiki had a question for you.
Just a quick question for you. Does the state of Alaska have the authority to act and build a federal government for controlling the most difficult wells that are in the most dangerous condition?
Senator Machiki, through the chair, I don't think that we do. I don't think that we have the authority to do the work, build them for it, and hope to get paid. I'm sure they wouldn't mind if we did the work, but I don't think that we can send them the bill. And you know, and part of me wants to do that, but the part of me that is looking to the future of Prudhoe Bay and Kuparuk and those dismantlements and abandonments, I don't want to set the precedent of cleaning up operators' messes for them, because I think that would be a bill none of us would want to pay. But, you know, don't want to pick on the administration, because lots of administrations have turned a blind eye to this. But, you know, the current administration is the only one we've got. So they're the one I'm asking right now. I want to put their money where their mouth is, because they're certainly talking about being the environmental heroes. So put your money where your mouth is and, you know, come up here and you're not going to be a hero, but you're just going to be a face saver or a little bit of an apologist. And to be fair to the Alaska BLM folks, they're Alaskans just like us, and I think they would like to clean this mess up, but they don't get a sufficient budget from the Department of the Interior to do anything meaningful. So I'm not going to cut the Department of Interior any slack. They take in billions of dollars in lease money from Alaska lease sales, and some of that money should go to fixing the mess that they made here. This next well is a well that the USGS is using. The USGS, United States Geological Survey, another branch of the Department of Interior, has taken about 17 of these wells and is using them for temperature monitoring. All 17 are old wells with all kinds of debris, old well heads, dangerous cellars, hundreds of pilings, assorted debris, shacks, and piles of drilling mud and other waste at their sites. You know, as long as they're using them, that's great, but clean up your mess, please. And we are working to make sure that they are truly being used and that in the meantime they're secure down hole. And there's that rental helicopter I was telling you about.
Commissioner, a question.
Okay.
So they're using this, I'm going to use the term for experimentation, so to speak, I mean gathering data. I'm looking at your slide number 5. There's a lot of pink color around this pond of water that has debris in it, and I'm aware that there are algae that eat oil. Is it possible that that's what the pink color is, and I don't want to cut them any slack, but is it potential that they're using this as a test site, a lab?
Senator Geisel, this particular site, it's a pond. This whole area is also known for natural seeps. So that probably is oil in the algae, and it's probably oil from a natural seep. But those barrels and that metal coiling and the wood and all the rest of the debris there didn't seep there naturally.
Thank you.
Looking at the next picture, as Representative Millett said, over time subsidence occurs and land areas become little ponds, and this is one of the sites that I worry is going to be covered by water in a few years, and out of sight and out of mind does not make safe. And the BLM has taken some of the wells off of their concerns list simply because they can't find them anymore. And those wells concern me a bit more. Sorry. Enough said on that. This next picture is a well that's right outside of Barrow. And this is one of the wells that the residents of Barrow can hear whistling, because it is whistling natural gas. But you know, the BLM recognizes that this is a high priority, so their plans for this well is, if we ever get money, we will fix this well. So we should all be encouraged by that. Yes, the sarcasm is still intended. So again, just imagine any other operator in this state. What would you do to me as your commissioner? I'm up for confirmation again this session, and I can imagine that if I were telling you that this is how I let all the people that I can control do things, that you would be saying, nice to see you, goodbye. Imagine any other operator giving us the excuse, you know, as soon as we get money we'll do something, but until we do, just live with it. It's just killing me. One reason that it's so expensive for the BLM to clean up these messes is that they wait until a well is an absolute disaster before they work on it. For example, a well is about to fall into the Arctic Ocean, and so the land around it has degraded, and it's not easy to get a rig on it anymore. Or its casing has collapsed, and the wellhead is rusted, and now it's leaking natural gas, and it's a mess. And so they'll get in and they'll clean up that one well. They'll wait till it's just a disaster and clean it up. And then in a lot of these areas, there are several wells that are in the same area. And so a lot of the cost is to mobilize and demobilize the equipment. And so rather than mobilize once, clean up all the wells, and demobilize once, they will swoop in, they'll mob and demob on that one well, adios, good luck to the rest of you. And if you do that MOB and DMOB on each and every well, each and every time, it's going to cost you orders of magnitude more than if you do it right.
Yes, Senator French.
Does BLM have the money to do this, and they're just refusing to spend the money to clean it up, or do they not have the money? Do you know?
Senator French, through the chair, I think China has the money. The federal government has a choice of where to spend its money, and it's an allocation issue. And as I said earlier, the Department of the Interior, which is the parent organization for the BLM, gets millions of dollars in lease sales in Alaska. And are
they free to spend that money?
No, they're not. Okay. That's why we need resolutions like this to go to Congress and say, hello, give these folks some money.
So we're waiting for Congress to act.
Yes. Well, okay. The BLM needs to put on their big boy pants and say, here's why we need this money. And they need to say it loudly enough. No, they're not. In fact, they told me that they're encouraged not to ask for money. Mm-hmm. They need to put on their big boy pants, and then the Department of Interior needs to put on its big boy pants, and then go to Congress and say, give us the money. And if they don't have any big boy pants, then perhaps they would just like to open up that area to leasing and make clean up a condition of the lease. Shell has approached me and said, I'll go out there and clean it up if you let me have the lease. Some of this stuff is highly prospective. And if they're not willing to do that, they owe the state of Alaska millions of acres. They could just give it back to us. I think we would know what to do with it. So there are three options. They could get the money, they could get somebody else with money to do it, or they could give it back to us. You know? But just sitting there and saying, not a problem, it's somewhere where nobody sees it, is not a solution, because this is my backyard and your backyard.
Commissioner, Senator Faircloth had a question.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. Ms. Forster, have we tried to lawyer up on this and just sue the federal government for all of it? Mm-hmm. Why don't we have the AG here? Why aren't we making a request to the governor of Alaska? We did it on Point Thompson when we thought they weren't acting on their leases. It's been long enough. You and I talked about this over 3 years ago. You asked me to wait. I've waited for 3 years. We've been to D.C. to ask for relief. They are not listening. It seems like it's time to take it to court so that we can show them how we take care of Alaska's land versus how they have chosen to remain leaving it for Alaska.
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, I think we may end up there. We may end up there. BLM has told us that they're going to get money to clean up some wells in the next 3 years. And they're going to do the worst wells. And
with all respect, it seems like a package deal after close to, 50 years or better that Alaska has waited long enough. And so I'd be happy to go with you to the Attorney General, with Representative Millett. But, this is a travesty for Alaska. I would love C-SPAN to pick it up and run with it. All of the environmental advocacy groups, the NGOs who have continued to sue Alaska for irresponsible development, I welcome them to join us in asking the federal government to clean up their act.
Senator Faircloth, the chair. The ALGCC is an independent agency. We don't work at the whim of the governor, so we're not part of the governor's cabinet. Having said that, we have a lot of respect for you guys, for the governor, and we try not to put him on the spot, put you on the spot. And the governor's office is aware of this issue, and I kind of would like him to take the lead on getting the AG involved.
Senator Faircloth?
Madam Chair, maybe you could write a letter on behalf of the Senate Resource Committee to request either the AG to come before us and explain why we're not moving on this issue, or ask them to partner in how we might move forward with a conversation that would at least talk about our legal options, and then about how we might exercise those options in a way that we might be able to reach compromise outside of the court prior to filing that action against the federal government.
Great suggestion. Consider it done. Senator Bishop.
Thank you. And Thanks for coming today and bringing this to our attention. You mentioned that this is a hazard to snow machines and other things, and you ought to try on, you ought to try running into one of these in the dark with a roller gun. But anyway, be that as it may, have you ever written a letter to the Secretary of the Interior?
Senator Bishop, through the chair, we have had we tried to get an appointment with him when Representative Millett and I were in D.C. and we were shunted down to a few lower levels on the ladder and were assured that our face time would be shared with him. So we've made personal visits in D.C. more than once to the Department of Interior and been patted on the head, turned around and kicked out the door. But last year there was a resolution, and these resolutions go to the Department of the Interior and to other, they went to Congress. They go, having you guys send him an ugly letter is better than me sending him one, and so we have done that. But I personally, the AOGCC has not sent a letter to Ken Salazar.
Okay, so you haven't sent
him. No, we have not sent a letter to him.
Thank you.
But I think he knows what we're thinking.
Thank you.
Representative Millett, did you want to add comment?
I did. Thank you for letting me come again. One of the things I do want to mention is you talk about, have we talked to the BLM and talked to the Department of Interior? Not only have Kathy and I tried to talk, but Senator Murkowski had a meeting with Secretary Salazar and brought this very issue up. As a matter of fact, when we were in Energy Council, I sat through Sally Jewell's confirmation hearing. She held up a picture of a legacy well and asked Sally Jewell what she would do if she was the new Secretary of Interior, and would she clean up those wells. On the record, the confirmation hearing, she said that she would work with Alaska and with the AOGCC to look into how to best clean up these wells. And I have sent a letter to Secretary Interior. As a matter of fact, the whole House of Representatives sent one before the resolution went out. We have tried to talk to Kim Elton, who was in the Department of Interior when we were there, because he's an Alaskan and it rises to his level. And, you know, this is an opportunity for this administration, because it's been through all administrations, Republican, Democrats alike, presidents have not cleaned up these wells. So this is a great opportunity for this administration to really be the heroes and be the true environmentalists that Alaska wants to see the BLM be. And on the other thing that I heard you ask was, why haven't the environmental groups got on board? I reached out to, and my staff reached out to, about 140 environmental groups. We even stopped PETA when we were in D.C. and showed him a picture of a fox that had died, but we don't know if it died because it was drinking the water from the well. One could assume that that's what it died from, because it died right next to the legacy well. And we couldn't even get PETA engaged. So we have reached out to every possible group that you can imagine environmentally that should be up in arms about this. You know, we're talking about a sled dog that unfortunately passed away because it got buried. We're talking about caribou. We're talking about birds. We're talking about fox. We're talking about all sorts of animals that the people in the North Slope subsist on a regular basis. Not only that, I have had people from the villages tell me that they won't even let their children go swimming anywhere near these wells because of what condition the environment is up in the Imperé. So it's affecting lives right now. It's a health issue. Not only could you hit it with a snow machine, but could you imagine, I think this is Ico Bay, if you lit a cigarette, if someone stopped on their snow machine and lit a cigarette, what would the effects of that be with that gas coming out of that well? So we have tried, it's been my mission since I've been in the legislature and Kathy brought this to me, to try and get anybody to pay attention, anybody. And it just is, because it's not Exxon, because it's not Shell, because it's not ConocoPhillips, because it's not British Petroleum, nobody cares. But I can tell you, when a thimble full of oil drops on the North Slope, every single environmental group is up in arms about how the oil companies are treating the environment. So I've challenged them. If you're going to go after the oil companies, then you should be going after the federal government, because this is a disgrace. It is an environmental disgrace, and it's on the BLM and the Department of Interior in every administration that has failed Alaska to clean these wells up.
Thank you. I think, Senator Dyson, did you have a question as well?
For
Probably
not. All right. He'll think of it again later.
No, I remember.
It's not appropriate.
Did someone else have a question? Senator Machicki.
Yeah, I have a question and a comment. The comment is when, in crafting the letter, I think we have folks that could help clean up the wells and a good price, since the federal government is cash strapped, might be a trade for 25 to 50% of OCS revenues in the future, which might be a handy way to handle it. But the real question I had, are you aware, is this a common in other remote Western states? As the USGS was out looking, is this a common condition?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, to my knowledge, the BLM doesn't operate a lot of other wells in other states, but my counterparts in other states tell me that they do have similar problems, but not on the scale that we have with the BLM.
Other questions?
Yeah.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, the history of this is pretty interesting. When the U.S. Navy started making the transition from sail to steam, you know, they went looking throughout the world for coaling stations. And the Navy particularly has always been very slow to make changes. But indeed, that's where coal fields, Homer, several other places got picked up. This was the Naval Petroleum Reserve. And because of the seeps there, people thought, well, there's a chance that maybe there's bunker oil available for naval ships. And that's why the Navy was out there, started drilling and so on and so forth. That's what it was, and it was a part of a national security thing. So that's how the government got involved and started here. And then I lose track of the history there, but when did they quit, Kathy?
The last one was in 1982.
Okay.
They did it in two or three chunks. They did a bunch right after World War II, and then they came back in the I think 60s, and then again in the late 70s.
So it's a historic legacy of for national security interests. The government wanted being in the position of having fuel and so on, as opposed to most other places, which are kind of private sector. That's one of the reasons why we don't have many other examples that are parallel here.
Thank you. Commissioner, proceed, please.
Okay. A few of the sites, but clearly not this one, have been revegetated, and as I said, they're hard to find. But those wells that can't be found, because they haven't been properly plugged, they're even more dangerous. They're out of sight and out of mind, but certainly not safe and secure. Now, if these wells were operated by any oil company, my agency could and would force compliance with our regulations and impose hefty fines for noncompliance. But, you know, there just aren't companies out there acting this way. Unfortunately, while we can find the federal government to be in violation of our regulations, there is nothing we can do to make them comply with them. At one of our public hearings a few months ago, BLM added insult to injury by bringing a lawyer to inform us that it is their legal opinion that they can come into our state at any time, go anywhere, and violate any of our regulations, and there's nothing that we can do about it. And that is on the record in one of our public hearings. My shrill retort was also on the record, but I don't think you need to hear that. We shouldn't have to force our own federal government into compliance with our state's regulations. As the highest authority protecting America's lands, the Department of the Interior should be setting the gold standard. They're certainly setting a standard, but it isn't gold. This was the conclusion of my presentation, but I want to go into my backup slides for just a minute and talk about something that Cherise mentioned, Representative Millett mentioned. The BLM listed in a report that they gave to me that their plans for 50 wells were, the BLM will need to prepare a determination of eligibility pursuant to Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act due to the age of this site. They did it for about 50 wells. If the site is not eligible, then the surface debris should be removed as funding allows or in conjunction with other scheduled operations, if possible. This is the plan for about 50 wells. And when I mentioned it to Representative Millett, and she mentioned it to the press, and the press started asking, BLM's response was, oh, no, 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 that's just in artful wording. That doesn't mean that if you know, if this historic site designation will keep us from cleaning them up. That is what they said. But further in the report, there are 9 wells that they have already told me that in the past, that they've done all they're going to do because of the historic site designation. And here's the wording that's in the report for those 9 wells. The well was marked with the well name and plug date on the cap, but otherwise it was left in its original condition in accordance with an agreement established with the Alaska State Historic Preservation Office. So they have already done that for 9 wells. And so when they say it's just inartful wording on the other 50, I'm not so sure that that is accurate.
Mm-hmm. Senator French has a question, Commissioner.
Has anyone looked at the agreement with the State Historic Preservation Office and read what it says?
There is no agreement with the State Historic Preservation Office. We have talked with the State Historic Preservation Officer, and she says that this is better wording for the BLM's report, and this more accurately describes what the process should be, because she does not have the authority, nor would she ever tell them they couldn't clean up one of these wells. So I'll read the wording. What it should say in the report and what they should do is, under Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act, prior to removal and cleanup of the well, the BLM will determine if the site is eligible for the National Historic Register in consultation with the State Historic Preservation Office. If the site is determined not eligible, BLM will make a finding of no historic properties affected and commence with the proposed removal cleanup. If the site is determined eligible, this determination in no way precludes removal cleanup activities. Rather, in consultation with SHPO, the BLM will mitigate the action, most likely through historic documentation, and then proceed with the proposed removal cleanup action at the site. So that's what SHPO says is correct. So BLM has been telling me something about an agreement that doesn't exist, and so I think they're just probably a little confused. So here's the list of wells for which they have already used that excuse. There are 9 of them, and I'll just give you a picture of one. And you tell me how proud you are of that historic site for Alaska. That is not in artful wording, and that certainly ain't no historic site. And that concludes my presentation.
Senator Bishop, you had a question.
Same one as Senator French.
All right. Very good. Any other questions from committee members? All right. Well, on the phone, we have Mr. Bud Cribley with the Bureau of Land Management. Mr. Cribley, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Great. Would you please put yourself on the record and give us your testimony?
Okay. My name is Bud Cribley, and I'm the state director for BLM here in Alaska. And I have provided a written statement to you, which I would like to go ahead and read into the record, if that's okay with you.
That would be great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And then also I have some comments and would be glad to take any questions that you may have of me regarding this resolution that is before you today. Reading from my statement is, I appreciate this opportunity to provide you with an update on the BLM's Legacy Well Cleanup Program since my comments to the House Resources Committee last month. And I would also like to, off of the statement, is apologize for not coming down and being at your hearing in person. It was my intention to do that, but because of the last-minute change of the scheduling on this, I wasn't able to get a flight down to Juneau, or I would be down there to talk to you in person. I would prefer to do business that way, but this is kind of where I'm at right now. But I'll go back on to my statement. The BLM recognizes the importance of cleaning up these well sites. As you know, since 2002, the federal government has spent almost $86 million in plugging legacy wells and cleaning up the surface at priority legacy well sites. We have plugged 18 wells and remediated contaminated soils where necessary with that funding. In the last several weeks, we have been working to finalize the Legacy Well Summary Report 2013 update. This update has been prepared following a comprehensive site-by-site inventory. A draft of the report was provided to the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, and the North Slope Borough, and the U.S. Geological Survey. I understand that AOGCC has prepared comments and that they will be coming our way shortly. We welcome their review and input. The summary report, once finalized, will be used to complete a strategic plan for addressing well cleanup. The strategic plan will document our goals for the program and identify actions necessary for closure of all legacy wells in NPRA. As you are all too aware, the cost of plugging these wells is compounded by the remoteness and inaccessibility for most of the year. Ice roads must be developed to move equipment and gear to set up on-site camps adequate to shelter workers in cold temperatures as cold as minus 40 below. Provisions and fuel must be constantly resupplied and daylight is limited. Specialized equipment must be winterized and transported on sleds for what can be hundreds of miles from Dead Horse, the principal road accessible supply depot. Regarding the SHPO issue, much has been said in the last few weeks and at this hearing, I might add, about the BLM's process of consulting with the State Historic Preservation Office regarding legacy well sites that are more than 50 years old. I want to assure you that this is part of our normal environmental review process and is not expected to result in any delays in accomplishing cleanup work. In addition, historical significance in and of itself does not preclude plugging or cleanup and is considered well in advance of the ground, on-the-ground activities. Regarding Simpson number 26, regarding the Simpson well number 26, a picture of which has been widely circulated at meetings on this issue, I would like to make a few clarifying reports. What you see in this picture is well that was drilled in a natural oil seep. That well was plugged by the BLM in 2006. The oil you see is from the natural seep and not from leaks. Surface solid waste cleanup still must occur, but is logistically difficult. During plugging operations back in 2006, the tundra was snow-covered, and workers at the site were unable to see and retrieve the barrels. Other surface debris has been removed from the site. The BLM's Arctic Field Office is planning to focus on surface remediation projects during the 2013 and 2014 field seasons, and this site is identified as a high priority. We appreciate and share your concern about the need to address the legacy wells issue. The BLM remains committed to seek funding to properly address those sites that pose a threat to public health and safety and the environment, and to conduct our work in a physically responsible manner. We will continue to work collaboratively with AOGCC, the Native Corporation, tribal governments, and other partners, including ASRC, as we prioritize well cleanup projects in the strategic plan and during the cleanup efforts. I want to thank you again for the opportunity to address you today, and I'll be glad to answer any questions that you may have regarding this issue.
Senator Dyson has a question for you. Mr. Cribley, thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Cribley, I appreciate your participating here with us, and I realize you didn't create the problem, and you're in the tough spot of having to try and solve it under different circumstances. I spent a lot of time working on the tundra east of where you're at. Do you guys have to obey the same regulations in terms of building ice roads and so on as the private sector does?
Whenever we're conducting operations on the North Slope, we have to go through the same permitting processes that we make private individuals go through. Doing an analysis under the National Environmental Policy Act, identifying what the potential impacts are, and incorporating mitigating measures and standard operating practices that we require of any private company.
I understood, and thank you. I probably know the list just about as well as you do. When you have to haul soil off for remediation, certainly in the Prudhoe Bay unit, you're in essence having to incinerate it. What do you guys do? Where do you take the contaminated soils?
It just depends on the circumstances and the location of where the material is at. We have worked in the past of stabilizing them on a site where there will be no environmental harms. In other cases, we've had to remove them from the site and transfer them to another location out of the National Petroleum Reserve that is certified for the disposal of those types of materials. It just depends. As we do our analysis, we try to figure out the cheapest way to stabilize those materials and use that as a tool.
Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Faircloth.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And Mr. Kribley, thank you. I know this may be a difficult conversation. Do you have records that are available to Alaskans on how you disposed of the dirt that you remediated from any well?
Yes, we do. It is in the records that we have at our office. So if anyone has any questions on that, we can just provide that information to them.
So when our attorneys contact you, we'll be able to get those records so we can see how much dirt was hauled out and whether you lit it on fire, incinerated it, or hauled it off of the tundra?
Yes, ma'am. And as we do that kind of work, we have been working with the state on that. So it's not like we have been doing that in a vacuum. It has been, to the degree possible, at least in the recent history, a collaborative process.
If I might, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Kribley, then do you do that communication with DNR, or do you do that directly with AOGCC?
I think a lot of that is done with the Department of Environmental Quality as opposed to DNR. A lot of the surface remediation work is done with that agency as opposed with AOGCC, where we work more specifically with downhole issues.
Yes, Senator Faircloth, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The only thing else that I remain concerned with, beside the travesty that Alaska has lived with for so long, is, well, two things. One, these are not legacy wells in the sense that we think there is any kind of legacy. These are, I would think, were negacy wells, if you want to. That would be negative. But I'm concerned about the historical designation, because I've seen other instances where once we declare something historical, it makes any landowner in the area unable to do anything on a piece of property. So the process that the federal government seems to be using to identify mass cleanup is to make it so no one can do anything else around it. Is that fair?
Well, I tried to provide that in my comments, and we don't feel that that will be the situation dealing with these wells and the cleanup of these wells. As a part of our federal requirements and regulations, we have to recognize the National Historic Preservation Act and the 106 process, which requires us to, as the State SHPO's office has already described to you, an inventory and assessment of those sites. And then based on that, we either mitigate, or if it's determined not to be eligible, we go ahead and clean up. But we don't feel that any of those sites, that there's going to be anything that comes out of that that is going to prohibit us or restrict us on the cleanup activities. A lot of times, if a site is identified to have significance to it, it's primarily an issue of documentation of what's on that site before we come in and clean it up. It's a routine process that we go through on all of our NEPA processes, whether it be private or federal operations, and something that we have done over time and continuously. So right now, we don't think we don't see this as being a problem. We have had informal discussions with the State SHPO, and they're willing and ready to work with us on this, to approach it from a programmatic standpoint, and to allow us to move forward with doing the right thing as far as cleaning these sites up.
Senator Faircloth, follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Cribley, I appreciate the effort to clean it up. What I am disappointed in is using a federal registry to try to block oil and gas exploration on the North Slope. And that's what it appears to be, is a backdoor to make sure that at no time could we enter our own property or the property of Alaska, and that somehow we should be thankful that eventually a mess from 50-plus years ago will be sometime in the future, if someone is willing to pay for it, cleaned up. I appreciate where you're at in the conversation. Again, Madam Chair, I hope that we can write a letter to the Attorney General and see what actions with the misuse of historical preservation that we might advocate for on behalf of Alaska. I'm wondering if it's used in this particular remediation style, what other use of this particular congressional language is being used. I do have a little bit of familiarity with this. We tried to preserve the Nike site in Arctic Valley, and went through a rigorous process to declare that site historical, and met quite a bit of barriers to do that. So I'm surprised that at least the picture that's being shown on our slides now and prior to that, that it would qualify for anything historic.
Thank you, Senator Faircloth. Senator French had a question.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Cribley. Question, I think I heard you say that so far BLM has spent $86 million on this problem. Is that right?
That's correct.
And what is the, if you know, what's the estimated price tag for completing the job?
We have not formulated a total cost to complete the job. Where we're at right now is we have, as I mentioned in my testimony, provided to AOGCC and other partners a copy of our legacy well summary report. It kind of identifies what the current situation is with the 136 wells. And from that, and when we get comments back from the only partner who has not responded back is AOGCC, when we get their comments back, to sit down and decide what work needs to be done and to incorporate that into the strategic plan that we're trying to finalize right now. And from that, we'll be able to develop what the cost figures will be. But until we get those comments back, it would be premature, or we're really not sure to what extent it's felt, you know, through this collaborative effort of what work needs to be done.
Follow-up, Senator French.
Thank you. And when was that $86 million spent? Was it spent in the past, or was it spent recently? When was it spent?
The money was spent from 2002 until the present.
And do you have, or do you anticipate spending, even though you don't know the total cost of cleaning up all the wells, do you anticipate spending money next year and the year after to continue the effort?
Right now, we are planning, we have a small amount of money within our FY or fiscal year 13 budget to do some work on the ground, and what we're looking at is surface cleanup. We're waiting right now for the president's budget for fiscal year 14 to be released. And it will address this and how much money we would be identifying to do that cleanup. I don't have those numbers right now, but I do know, all in addition to that, that Senator Murkowski and Begich are both working to try to help secure funding for us to help with this cleanup for fiscal year 14 and future funding years.
Just last question on this point. Do you remember what you say you have a small amount left to spend in FY13? Do you remember how much was appropriated in 13 for the effort? Was it a $1 million, $5 million, roughly?
We have about $1 million that has been set aside for addressing legacy well issues. The past several years, we've been using a portion of that money to help with the updating of the inventory and assessment of the current situation of the wells, but also some of that money has been used to do some well cleanup that we've been finalizing those last couple of years.
And follow-up? Maybe you misunderstood my question. It sounded like you have about $1 million left, but was that the total amount appropriated in FY13 for the well cleanup effort was $1 million, or do you know?
No, you're correct. We were appropriated, or we show about $1 million available for legacy wells in fiscal year 13.
Thank you.
Further questions for Mr. Cribley? Yes, Senator Faircloth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Cribley, Ms. Forrester talked about trying to target more than one well at a time as far as the demobilization and mobilization. Could you please carry that message back to the group that is looking at this? It seems if we were trying to attract and look regionally at issues, we might be able to attack the problem more efficiently than one road in and one road out. If you could just coordinate at least our request that when you prioritize, you look at trying to tackle more than one task in forming an ice road and all those costs that are associated with it?
That's exactly what we're doing with the strategy that we're developing right now, is looking at doing it in bundles, so to speak, where we go into an area and look at a group of wells based on what the priorities are and where we feel the highest risks are, and then put together a package of wells in that area that we would then clean up and try to leverage the equipment being in there and trying to be as efficient with the dollars as we possibly can rather than just going in and doing one well at a time. So that is already in a part of the framework of the strategy that we're hoping to be able to get out to get reviewed here very quickly as soon as we get the well summary report completed based on comments from AOGCC.
Follow-up, Senator Faircloth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Cribley, do you use local Alaskan contractors for remediation, or do you bring in an outside crew?
Any of the work that we would do is put out on bid, and we would generally go with the lowest bidder or the best bid. So, it could be, it just depends on how the bids come in and the one that is the most efficient for us.
Follow-up, Senator Faircloth?
Madam Chair, I just was hoping that we were using Alaskans that would know the issue, because your costs go, even though an individual contractor might come in low on a bid, they don't know the challenges that they face working in minus 40 degrees. And so, again, if I could suggest, Mr. Cribley, that at least on the contracts that you're letting, I hope that you're giving some weighting to people who have experience in cold climates. And Senator French asked a great question on when that $86 million was spent, and I'm wondering if we reviewed that, if we would see if there were ways that we could help internally to the state of Alaska to point you in a direction that cleanup dollars might be used a bit more efficiently with contractors who work in this climate all the time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I can respond that to date we have been using local Alaskan contractors to do that work. And we do factor in experience in working in the Arctic when we do the technical review of those bids before we let them. We do, based on the many years that we've been doing this work, we've gained experience and also working with our partners and identifying the best way and the best people to work on that. And as you say, the local contractors are the ones that we like to go to because we can get it done right and do it right the first time. And that's very important to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Cribley.
Thank you. Senator Dyson, did you have a question?
I did, but Senator Faircloth asked it.
All right. Further questions for Mr. Cribley? Thank you very much, Mr. Cribley, for the time you spent with us and your testimony. Representative Millett, Commissioner Forrester, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mentor. I'm just frustrated that we continue down this path year after year, and we've offered many very good suggestions to the BLM and Department of Interior on how Alaska could aid in the cleanup of the legacy wells. Not only have we offered, but so has the North Slope Borough, and now Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, by happenstance, by having land conveyed to them, not knowing that the legacy wells were on their land, are now involved in this also. It seems to me that we get pushback from the Department of Interior every step we take, yet they are willing to spend $350 million to resod the mall down in D.C.
It is.
So I'm frustrated. I'm going to continue down this path with, holding their feet to the fire and try to get the wells cleaned up. And anything that this committee can do, I'm absolutely hopeful that we can put as much pressure on the AG and BLM and our delegation down in D.C. to really make this a priority for Alaskans.
Thank you, Representative Millett. Senator Dyson has a question.
Yeah. My experience with recalcitrant government officials and public policymakers is one thing they all dread, and that's seeing their pictures on the front page above the fold. And I would encourage us to get our partners, in essence, Barrow, North Slope Regional Corporation, to get very involved in getting the media to have these pictures and this issue very prominent in the press. And I would think that that's the kind of stuff that would sell reality shows and Discovery and National Geographic and so on. I suspect, as usual, you're way ahead of me, but that's been the most effective lever I know of to get the bureaucratic monsters to move. And I don't mean the gentleman here from BLM has just been talking to us, who sounds like he's a very responsible gentleman.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, if you look at page 3, one of the resolves is actually asking the Office of the Governor to disseminate information through appropriate national news outlets and by any other available means to increase awareness nationwide of the dangerous conditions of the legacy wells and legacy well sites. So we've asked the governor's office to do that. I think that there's a big opportunity to do exactly what you're talking about, to raise the awareness and get more people other than Kathy and I and this committee enraged about what's the travesty that's happened on the North Slope.
Senator Machicki, did you have a question?
I have a comment. I'm very frustrated by the situation. I think it's a double standard, and I think it's the worst kind of double standard. But at the very least, what I'd like to see, cite me evaluation, priority list, and the work plan that I hope we're partners in. At the very least, what I'd like to see this summer is certainly collecting what can be creating further issues in barrels and things like that. That's summer work. You're not going to go out in the winter and collect the barrels. You're not going to pull them out of the tundra. But the most important priority for me this summer is that they get reflective permanent markers that can be seen from a distance so that we don't have obstacles that hunters are going to hit on a snow machine or workers are going to hit while out on the tundra. And that seems like a low-cost investment that, at the very least, should have been done decades ago.
Senator Machicki, through the chair. In the report that the BLM gave us, the reason that we're taking so long to respond is that our response right now, I'm not finished with it just about, but it's about 35 pages of response. And that sort of thing is part of the response. But something that concerns me even as much as putting up reflective tape and that sort of thing, several of these wells have wellheads on them, and they were left as completed oil or gas wells. Some of them have pressure on them. Some of them have had leaks. At least one of them has been tampered with. The valve turned and oil flowed. None of these is locked. None of these well heads has locks on any of the valves. I would think that that would be kind of a high priority, too. But yes, BLM will get our comments. It takes a while to comment on a document of this size, especially when we're that far apart on our view of things. They list fewer than 10 of the wells as having medium or high surface risk, and most of them look exactly like those ones I showed you, and they're all assessed low. So, you know, I've got a lot of work to do to give them my feedback, and Bud, I'm working on it.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Dyson.
Yeah. Often, Senator McChickie and I, minds go in the same direction. So here's a great project. We get some high-quality signs that are very reflective that says this historic mess memorializes the incompetence and hypocrisy of the federal government in managing Alaska's affairs, and make those double-sided and reflective. And we could appropriate a little bit of money, and I bet you Charisse and I, between us, have some friends up there that would be glad to go out and attach them to the wellheads.
Through the chair, I'd even go out and do that.
Thank you, Senator Dyson. Senator Faircloth.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In seriousness, they need to be flagged, but my concern with advocating for historical signs is that's what they'll be taken as, historical documentation, when they need to be hazard signs, not historical documentation.
Thank you. Senator Bishop.
I just got one follow-up question, just one last comment. What about the Roligan operator that runs over the pressurized wellhead in the middle of the night, and he's dead, and his family has no father to further care for his wife and his siblings? Who's responsible then?
Through the chair, those are the exact questions that we've asked the BLM. Snow machiner, a son, daughter on a snow machine, 10 years old, happens often out in the North Slope, subsistence hunting, fishing. It is a accident waiting to happen, and we have told the BLM, we've told the Department of Interior, and so has the Native corporations that live around those areas. And I you know, I hate to say it, but I think that, you know, a tragedy like that is bound to happen. And I don't know who would be responsible and how we would explain it to our citizens that we let this happen on our watch.
Thank you. Further questions or comments? I want to open it up to public comment. Is there anyone in the room or online that wishes to comment on the resolution? Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Further questions, comments from committee members? Senator Faircloth, you had an amendment.
I do, Madam Chair. I'd like to move amendment number one. Does everyone have a copy of it? Madam Chair, amendment number one is on, I'll make it conceptual, it's on page 4, line 8, and it's actually 7 and 8. And what I propose to do is remove the Honorable Mike Poole acting. That person is not there any longer. And insert Neil Corns, Principal Deputy. And I can pass the amendment that I have around.
We have copies. Thank you. Is there objection to the amendment? Hearing none, the amendment number one is adopted. Any further amendments or discussion? Yes, Senator Faircloth.
Madam Chair, the only other discussion I have is that we actually have legacy wells that are benefiting Alaska. And what struck me every time somebody said legacy well is if the general public is listening, they may think that the bad actor is someone on our North Slope that's been benefiting Alaskans for years and is required with a teaspoon or a droplet of oil to report, be responsible, and accountable to the state of Alaska, and if they're not, face fines to Alaska and to the people of Alaska. And so is there a reason that we're using that word when it really is, I don't know that it's a legacy. I don't know how, it's a tragedy. It's many things, but.
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, I think it's a consistent pattern of artful wording by the federal government.
Thank you. Follow-up, Senator Faircloth?
Madam Chair, there's no legacy here, is my...
Right. That's not a name that we gave them. It's the federal government's name for it.
It's a travesty. And in future resolutions, if we move forward, I'm not going to do anything to this one, but I certainly would like us to use different language in referring to someone who is not taking in regard for how Alaska treats its land at all, and somehow find a different word that's more appropriate to the destruction and devastation that's been left behind.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Vice Chair Dyson, do you have a motion?
Yeah, I move that we move SJR 6 as amended, Legacy Oil Cleanup Awareness, NPRA, committee with individual recommendations, and I suspect in zero fiscal notes.
Senator Dyson, I believe you mean House Joint Resolution.
What did I say? House JR.
Yes, and it is amended in its amended form.
Yep.
Great. Any objections? With that, the amendment will pass, or the resolution will pass from this committee to the next committee of referral, actually, which is the Senate floor. So thank you very much, Representative Millett and Commissioner Forrester, for being with us today. This ends the agenda for today. Our next meeting is Wednesday. We're going to take up Senate Bill 71, Payment of Fishery Resource Landing Tax, and we're going to have an update of the Alaska Pipeline Project. In the meantime, I will be contacting Attorney General Garrity and asking him to meet with us at the earliest opportunity to discuss the legal issues related to the legacy wells, or travesty wells, as we're now coining it. With that, I will adjourn the meeting. The time is 4:49 p.m. Thank you.